Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd. Today, we're going to continue our discussion about Vlad the Impaler. I think we're on part 72 by now, right?
Yeah, I think he's already been impaled.
Yeah, has he?
Yeah.
But joining us once again, we have Crumb, the master student, our most recurring guest outside of Pat Beeman on an island. But Crumb, glad you could join us today. How's things going over there?
Peace and love, gentlemen. Thank you so much for having me. The Wolf and the Shepherd, I love it here. Thank you again.
Yeah, we love having you, man. So let's pick up where we left off, and hopefully you remember exactly where we left off. And I'm seeing you kind of nod at me because I realize I need to let you share your screen. So there you go. You should have screen sharing ability.
Yeah, so thank you so much. I do remember, you know, these days I'm eating, sleeping, dreaming Vlad. So we left off singing his praise as usual about him being a military genius, balls of steel. You know, what more can I say? So basically, Rome has fallen. As Wolf was saying, there's a power vacuum. The Goths can't quite fill it. The Ottoman Empire is coming in. The last of the Mohicans, meaning the last of the warrior class, is Vlad. But this is the David and Goliath fight where David dies a horrible death, let's be clear. However, before he meets his demise, he goes out like a champion. He goes out like a hero. I can't think of anybody more brave than him in the last 1,000 years, verily I say unto thee, Christians. But with that said, shall I just kind of really pick up where we left off? Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's pick up right where we left off.
So the Ottoman army managed to advance as Vlad instituted a policy of scorched earth. We were talking about other great military leaders that Europe has, and Napoleon being one of them. At the Battle of Waterloo, Russia adopted scorched earth policy along with Vlad, and that was the only way they could defeat Napoleon. And you know, because Napoleon is just so much bigger than Russia, keep in mind this is the guy of his day, so much so was the Ottoman Empire. So Vlad had to become really strategic in the way he fought this guy. You can't just fight somebody like this head on. So he adopts the scorched earth policy, poisoning the waters and also creating marshes by diverting waters of small rivers. Traps were created by digging pits, then covering them with timber and leaves. You know, the banana in the tailpipe gig, you know, the same old. The population of animals were evacuated and up to the mountains, so there's nothing for them to eat on the way to pursue him. I'm sorry, I forgot where I left off. I was reading right then. The population of animals was excavated up into the mountains. And as Mehmed advances for 7 days, his army suffered from fatigue as he found no man nor any significant animal and nothing to eat or drink. Vlad adopted guerrilla tactics as his cavalry made several hit and run attacks. This is very sophisticated, being that they're vastly outnumbered, you know, like 100 million to 1. I'm exaggerating. He would also send ill people suffering from lethal diseases like leprosy and tuberculosis. This gentleman is why I am so why history needs to be more kind to Vlad. This is bio war hazards. So when he says this, does this to knock down their numbers, those who suffered from the bubonic plague, he also sent them to intermix and infect the Turks. The bubonic plague managed to spread in the Ottoman army successfully. The Ottoman fleet launched a few minor attacks, but without being able to do much damage. As Vlad Tepes, this is other guy named Vlad, had destroyed most ports in Bulgaria. This is feudal system, everybody's fighting. But these other guys, I'm not gonna attempt to say their names, the Chalcodikes, he writes that the Sultan managed to capture a Wallachian soldier and at first tried to bribe him for info. But when that didn't work, threatened him with torture to no avail. These are men. These are soldiers. You can beat the dog crap out of me. I remain loyal to the crown. That is what, you know, we don't see this, you know, unless you're not going to find a great follower unless you just have that much great leadership. Last sentence and I'll pass the mic. Mehmed was said to have commanded the soldiers by saying, if your master had many soldiers like yourself, in short time, he could conquer the world.
You know, it kind of reminds me of the whole Napoleon thing, how, you know, over the years, everybody had said how Napoleon was short, but really by the standards of the day, Napoleon wasn't short. Wasn't he like 5'9", 5'10"? I mean,
yeah, I think
now so. If he had an Instagram account and was trying to date on there, I guess he would still be considered short, because anything what under 6 foot tall is considered short.
Yeah, but he'd say like 5'11". It's not like it'd tell the truth. It'd be catfishing.
Yeah, like 5'11" and a half or so.
Do you know why he put his hand in his jacket?
No.
Apparently he suffered from really bad seasickness and got diarrhea and was puking up a lot. And really? So that he always had his stomach around his waist, whereas people used to think it was some, you know, wonderful military pose.
Yeah. Because you always see the military guys and they're like doing this thing or whatever. So it wasn't that.
No, it's because his ass was about to let go.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it could have been from all the dysentery and everything, from all the mess that was going on when he was leaving all that behind.
And the French food.
Oh, yeah. Let's not forget about the French food.
Yeah.
He was tall. In fact, he was taller than me. I'm 5'6". I so 5'10", 5'11". You're up there, bro. You know, I look up to these guys like that. But even in his short.
Well, you kind of have to, don't you? I mean, if you're 5'6", you got to look up to him. I mean, you got to hand it to short people because they can't reach it.
Hey, he's gonna hit you with a whole bunch of, are you sitting on a booster seat and all this stuff for the night?
Oh, no.
The rest of the episode.
No, I wouldn't do that. No, I've got a buddy of mine that's like 5'3", so you're taller than him.
Yeah,
so.
But she's 9.
No, we're talking about a full-grown adult. Well, not full-grown, but he's an adult. Yeah. He's older than I am, younger than you are, but he's still 5'3".
Yeah, but he did star in Lord of the Rings as one of the hobbits. So
you know where he missed out? And I know he listens. You know where he missed out? Him and I were in a bar one night, and we're sitting there, and we're, you know, just talking back and forth, and this dude turns around, and he just, you know, just decides to join the conversation, right? So seemed like a really nice guy and everything. Turns out the dude literally owned a stable for riding horses, for race horses, and wanted my buddy to be a jockey. Because if you think about how short jockeys are, and he's looking at this guy, we were up there on motorcycles. He's like, you already know how to ride a motorcycle. And this friend of mine owned horses when he was a kid. And I told him, I'm like, look, man, this is your calling. You need to be a jockey. And he passed it up. And I think that's a worst mistake that he made in his life, because he could have been like, you know, triple crown winner, all that good stuff. But instead decided to be a drummer.
Are you
in a
trying
band.
To tell Crumb he should become a jockey?
I think Crumb's too tall to be a jockey. I think you have to be like 5'4", 5'5", somewhere around
there.
Well,
you can identify as 5'1".
That's true. Yeah. You could. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
But he might have to cut his hair.
Right.
Because I don't think your hair would fit in that little jockey hat that they have to wear.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they have to wear that little jockey hat thing with the little point on the top and everything. And Crumb's dreadlocks will just be sticking out of there. And then the wind resistance from the race with the dreadlocks going. Yeah, that wouldn't be a good thing. You'd have to cut the hair.
You know, I have issues when I'm driving and then I go to look to the side or out of rearview mirror, that my peripheral blind spot. If I turn too quickly, my hair will get in, so there's some, a little ergonomic issues with that. I'm with you.
Yeah. You would have to cut your hair if you're going to be a jockey.
Yeah. And I choose.
But small price to pay, though.
Yes.
Small price to pay. Yeah. You could always cut them off and put those little attachments on the end. So then after you get off the horse, you could just snap them back into your hair.
I was going to say I could cut it off It beats my second option in terms of great jobs short people apply for. Oompa Loompa, let's go with Jockey. Hey, small things to a giant.
Absolutely. I mean, what a great job, too.
Yeah.
I mean, all they do is ride around the track one time. That's all they do. And then they collect a check right there at the end.
Well, the Shepherd hasn't mentioned we actually have the most popular podcast on midgets in the world. The most listened to.
Yeah. Number one on Google.
Yeah.
No, you don't qualify. You don't qualify as a midget expert. We're still looking for our favorite midget. Yeah. So you're too tall to be a midget.
Yeah. Yeah. We see in Scotland, they used to have this competition like tossing the caber.
Right.
Which was like,
I think they still do that.
Yeah. And it's like tree trunks with the branches sawn off. But yeah, you're tossing the caber. And then I think it was in Ireland, tossing the dwarf.
Right.
Came into.
Well, they do that over here in the US.
But I just want to give a shout out to the listeners and viewers and just say, do not type into Google tossing the dwarf, because you're going to come up with some links, which
that might get some not suitable for work.
Although stuff. Modern day, it's not suitable for work.
Yeah.
Some happy dwarves on those websites.
Well, I thought they were all happy. That's why they whistle while they're work.
Yeah, but some of them are grumpy, mate. Remember grumpy?
Oh, that's true. But one out of seven isn't bad.
Yeah, that's what Meatloaf said.
He's the one. Okay, I opened a can of worms.
And, you know, that's why we're in part four right now, and we're barely through like half the slide deck. Yeah. I mean, you knew that was going
to
happen.
Has Vlad been born yet? Are we up to
right? Well, you know, for the sake of time, because I could say so much about him, but I've you know, want to make it more cohesive. So I do got more, but I want to make it no more than one more episode. This is the end all be all. Military genius.
Oh, he's already getting sick of us. See, at episode four, he's already like, I can give these guys one more episode, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's pulled the midget card, but
Well, you know, in all fairness, we've got a lot of things to talk about, gentlemen. A lot more.
Oh yeah. But we don't want to spend all our time with you on Vlad, because off the air we've talked about some other topics that you're coming back on. But yeah, you're right. We gotta let's try to maintain focus here. Let's try to get through Vlad.
Just try and bury
Vlad. We can do it.
But according to legend, he'll come back to life soon.
So. The Sultan besieged him and discovered him in a certain mountain. Busted. The Wallachian was supported by the natural strength of the place. You know, this is a highly dense mountainous area. There, Vlad was hidden himself along with 24,000 of his men. Keep in mind, by this time, the Sultan's not sending nobody. He's like 100 million strong. 24,000 is nothing. Seriously. Anyway. He has him and his little 24,000 men were hiding out, you know, and these were the men who were willing to follow him. These are the last of Nohicans, some real soldiers. So when Vlad realized that they would either be perished from hunger or fall into the hands of their cruel enemies, who considered both eventualities unworthy of such brave men, he dared commit an act worthy of being remembered. Calling his men together and explaining the situation, saying something to the effect of, hey, look, guys, we've been compromised. They know where we're at. We know they're going to come in here. And it's either we go get them or they come and get us. So only thing we're going to have from here on out is the element of surprise. He easily persuaded them to enter the enemy camp the day before they themselves were going to meet their dooms and their fate, buying them some more time. He divided the men so that they either should die bravely in battle with glory and honor, or else, should destiny prove favorable for them, they should avenge themselves against the enemy in an exceptional manner. So, making use of some Turkish prisoners who had been caught at the twilight when they were wandering about imprudently, At nightfall, Vlad penetrated the Turkish camp with part of his troops all the way up to the fortification. Let me explain what I meant there. My apologies. He found some goofy Ottoman Empire Turks out where they're not supposed to be. And he knocked them in the head, Scooby-Doo style. Boink! Took their clothes. Vlad puts their clothes on. Family, y'all listening audience, you're going to have to go back to part one. In part one, I told the good brothers, the Wolf and the Shepherd, that Vlad was raised behind enemy lines like Bane. So now he's going to learn the language. He knows the accent. He knows the mannerisms. So he boink, knocks him on the head, puts his clothes on, walks into the enemy encampment. Who goes there? He says some Turkish, whatever Turkish is. Bear with me. My accent is just, that's not Turkish at all. That's me.
I thought it was more like, go, go, go.
No, that's Scottish.
Oh, okay.
He is so... I can't breathe. Right.
That's okay. We don't have any Scottish listeners.
Yeah, no, probably not. No. I don't think they have the internet over there yet, do they? Yeah, probably not. Yeah, I would bet not. But I wonder, if Vlad knew about Turkish prisons, because I've always wondered a little bit about that, because in the movie Airplane, the captain is there in the cockpit and he's like, have you ever been to a Turkish prison? So I'm thinking that's a euphemism for something.
Right.
Teach. Now I got to go watch that because I'm such a
bad. Oh, you've never seen the movie Airplane? You gotta watch the movie Airplane. It's one of the funniest comedies of the 1970s. So a little before your time, a little before our time, actually, it was kind of a new movie when The Wolf came along, but yeah, huge, huge, popular, funny movie Airplane. Yeah. But it's in there. Yeah.
Okay. Touche. So Vlad takes these guys because they're basic. If we don't do something, we're just waiting for these people to come and kill us. So the only thing they have is the element of surprise. So, what do you do when you don't know what to do? You better use every single thing you have. And the shepherd, the wolf and I talked, I think maybe on episode 2 or 3 about the resources that he had at only one point in time. All he had was the element of surprise, and he used it as if he was the Goliath. Again, balls of steel. He's going to do what no one expects him to do. And that's why I'm just so amazed at this guy. Let me just move forward. I know I got some other stuff to close us out with. I still got a lot to go. During the entire night, he sped like lightning in every direction and caused great slaughter because they were asleep. I caught you. Hey, wake up. I cut your throat. So much so that the other command to whom he entrusted his remaining forces had been equally brave. This is a leader, and he's going to, be such a genuine a military genius that even when I'm not with you, the other people he divided up, they did exactly as he told them to do. Hey, guys, I need you, one person, to stand up against 500 people, and they do it. Almost to perfection. Or had the Turks not fully obeyed the repeated orders from the Sultan not to abandon the garrisons. Not only does my one man got the upper hand of 500 men, I've spooked the 500 men with the element of surprise. And though you got 500 to my one, the Turkish side is fighting so that their people don't abandon and go AWOL during this this sneak attack. No different than, speaking of military genius, George Washington crossing the Delaware. I'm gonna attack you guys on Christmas night when you're asleep, when you're drunk, element of surprise. Same thing, Revolutionary War, brothers.
I think I'd have actually been surprised any day of the year.
Yeah. No, that's probably true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I wonder if there were balloons.
What you mean, like along with the trumpets? Because that kind of ruins the element of surprise, doesn't it?
No, but balloons always make surprises better.
That's true, but you don't normally have the balloons until the surprise is bam, right in your face.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah.
And the balloons could give it away.
Mind you, I don't know what I was talking about when I was saying somebody leading with balloons in front of an army either. Because
yeah, well,
I don't
think they,
that's ever happened.
Yeah, but they used drums back then too. Ooh. I'm sure there was like a balloon carrier also. It's like, look, I've got some balloons and we got a drum.
Yeah, but that'd be even worse than giving the game away, wouldn't it? Because you could hear the drums from miles off. You can't always see the balloons from a long way away.
No, it depends on what color they are.
Nah. What if there's a hill in the way?
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But it also depends on how long the ribbons are on the balloons.
Yeah.
No.
If I could bring this banter back full circle, if the family goes back, I believe it was episode 3, just because we're going full circle right now. We know it was episode 2 where we were critical of another David and Goliath story with the Revolutionary War against these colonists, 13 colonists, against the greatest navy of that time, the British Navy. So now, you know, you got the red coats. These guys are just wearing these big, bright red. This is not camo, nothing. We're standing in line. Versus these colonists, you know, half of them are just militiamen. You know, we were full-time farmers prior to the war. And, you know, we're seeing this guerrilla warfare where, you know, we're not going to go with the standard British way of how we used to engage in war to this advanced civilization. I'm sorry, these advanced tactics. So if we think about how the British did it, within the Revolutionary War, compared to, which was not, you know, 1776. This is, let's say, 2026. That's 17, 18, 19 to 20. 400 years, a little bit less than 400 years. So now we're dealing with Vlad, which is almost 1,000 years ago. Let's stop talking crap about Vlad. You know, somebody give this man his respect.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that. You know, coming up with those kind of tactics and everything, especially with the way the battles and wars and everything were fought back then, he just changed the rules. Changed the rules midstream.
Do you know where the origin of actually wearing red as a military uniform came in and why?
Well, because if you get shot or whatever and you bleed, it makes your laundry bill cheaper.
Well, that is true, but only in countries where they're having to balance their GDP. Kind of.
Oh, well, yeah. No.
Actually, the reason was that if you got shot, that somebody in the distance couldn't tell you've got shot. So if you came up against armies with limited weaponry, they wouldn't know if they were all targeting people who had already been injured. And so it allowed for, like, to disperse some waste gunfire and so.
No,
it helped actually as an advantage. Obviously, it didn't help as camo.
Right.
But, you know, with short-range warfare as it was then, you know, I mean, if you're within line of sight, there was only so much camouflage in you.
Well, yeah, but they were all lining up, like, in the middle of a field anyway, and they were looking at each other. Yeah. So camouflage wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the snipers were standing right out there in front with the other guys that could barely shoot.
Right.
But the drummer boy was at least in the back with the balloons.
Yeah.
And, you know, you bring such a great point. And that's my thing with history. Let's put it into context. And I can't remember which general it was, because keep in mind, these were, for the most part, militiamen, full-time farmers, part-time, you know, soldiers. And I forgot which general it was, but he said, do not fire until you can see the whites of their eyes. And even now, you know, based off those old sayings, in the military, they say, I think it was in Full Metal Jacket or one of these military movies, you better shoot straight, because back then, you know, they weren't shooting straight. It was a lot of misfire or whatever the case may be, bringing into great points into perspective.
Yeah. And I think part of that whole don't shoot them until they see the whites of their eyes was because they had, like, limited ammo and all that. And so they wanted to make sure every shot counted.
Well, I can't remember, but it might have also been against what effectively was an unarmed opposition, as in they were armed, but I don't know if they had firearms, because otherwise, why would you make that decision? It would be the worst military advice ever.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, touche. So with Vlad, if I can continue on singing his praise. Here we go. The Wallachian undoubtedly would have gained the greatest and most brilliant victory. I'm sorry, excuse me. So they were trying to convince the Turks not to abandon the garrisons. Because if they did, then he would have gained the most brilliant victory, 500-1. I mean, what are the odds? But the other commander, a boyar named Gales, did not dare attack the camp from the other side as had been agreed upon. And this was the kink in Vlad's armor. Vlad carried out an incredible massacre without losing many men in such a major encounter. Though many men were wounded, I'll give them that, we abandoned the enemy camp before daybreak and returned to the same mountain from which we had left. No one dared pursue us. 500-1, they said, screw it, we'll stay where we at. That's a hell of a wolf ticket. Wolf tickets are something we are coining today. Well, not today. I think it was in Vlad. I'm sorry, Vlad episode 2 or 3. We selling wolf tickets in the name of the Wolf and the Shepherd. Ain't nobody playing with y'all.
Yeah, and we don't appreciate the scalping part of that either, because then we don't get any money off that.
Well, you know, we do, because if we don't get many sale. If we don't get many sales up front, we actually send them out deliberately, selling them at a cheaper price, so at least we get something.
But we could actually sell them to somebody, then buy them cheaper and sell them again, so we could scalp our own tickets and make more money. Sounds like a lot of work, though.
What are these tickets for?
I don't remember.
Well,
can't we just sell tickets just to sell tickets?
Well, he's the one who told us there was an event we're selling tickets to.
Yeah, but do we care if there's even an event? We just want to sell the tickets.
Okay.
We're not going to turn up to the event.
Well, what are they going to do? Like win a cup? Win a cup.
Like 500 tickets?
Yeah.
We sold 500 tickets for like a dollar a piece. Then we get $500 and we just go to the store and buy a $10 cup.
Okay.
We make $490.
Yep.
Oh, we got to print the tickets though.
Yeah.
Oh, we could do it digitally.
Yeah.
We can make more money that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Email the tickets. All right. We'll be emailing the tickets for the cup drawing that we're never going to put together.
Yeah.
It's settled. Deal.
There we go. Yeah. We got that one all figured out now.
Right. So after he proved that he was worthy of respect, listen, this dude is badass. No one dared pursue him since he had caused such terror and turmoil. I learned by questioning those who had participated in this battle that the Sultan lost all confidence in the situation. Rumor on the street, because keep in mind, Vlad grew up with this dude. I grew up with you. I knew how you were from a kid. And this dude means business. And at this point, the Sultan, Mehmed II, who just crushed the spirit of everybody in Europe, has now officially met his match. During that night, the Sultan abandoned the camp and he fled. In essence, gentlemen, he pissed his pants. He pissed his pants for good reason. Had this man done this to me and I thought I had the upper hand, I would have been feeling some type of way, to say the very least. So he fled camp in a shameful manner. He would have continued on this way had he not been reprimanded by his friends and brought back almost against his will. 500-1, and they've got to convince you to come back and fight this man. Grow a pair of balls and go back and face him. You're 500-1. Stop playing. So this is where my story for Vlad reaches its height. I've said all of these things to say the baddest moment in Vlad's life is in this one slide. And this is, I want to go down here from here. So military genius, and then we're downhill. The Janissaries under command of somebody, Ali Bey, pursued the Wallachians and killed about 1,000, 2,000 of them, whatever, not a lot. Keep in mind, it's 24,000. According to the chronicle of this one guy, the total casualties for the conflict were numbered at about 5,000 Wallachians, on the Wallachian side, excuse me, and about 15,000 on the Ottoman side. They had a hard time, even at 500-1, to kill these dudes. This is Rambo. This is Bruce Willis, Hard to Kill. I don't know if Die Hard. This was the original Die Hard. Even though the morale of the Sultan and his army was low, Mehmed decided to besiege the capital, but instead found it deserted with its gates wide open. The Turkish army entered the capital, and for about half an hour, the army marched on the road that was bordered with some 20,000 impaled Turks. We've been beaten. We've been demoralized. We've been terrorized. We're tired. We felt like giving up. And now we're about to face off with this guy. This is the part where they say, and then you gotta fight the boss. This is the stage where you're about to go and fight the boss. In order to get to the boss, you're gonna have to walk past 20,000 impaled of your brothers, your sisters, your children, all of my traitors, anybody who has said anything that I didn't even feel comfortable with, you've got to walk past all of that to finally get to me. I want to confirm we're not playing chess. It's a hit for hit. This is psychology at its highest performance when we're dealing with Vlad. I know it took me 4 episodes, gentlemen, and I apologize for making a short story long, but I felt like to get to this point, we had to go through those previous 3 episodes.
Yeah, I think also what I can't remember if you mentioned, but at this time as well, there were already legends, supernatural legends about Vlad, which, you know, the opposing army was hearing, which also lowered the morale among, you know, obviously the soldiers. And that played a big part in the psychological warfare. And there were actually people who say that Vlad actually planted the seeds of some of these legends about himself to spread throughout the lands so that that would do as much damage.
Just old school propaganda.
Yeah.
Right. Like wartime propaganda. So my question is, the Sultan, was he spending too much time trying to find the lamp? Because wasn't it the Sultan that was trying to go after Aladdin to find the lamp to get the genie?
You mean the Sultan of Swing, the guy who dies straight?
No, you're thinking of the Sultan of Swat that hits all the home runs.
Oh, right. Yeah,
him. Yeah, no, I'm talking about the Sultan that was talking to Aladdin and wanted him to go get the lamp. That was the Sultan, wasn't it?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was. But I don't think they ever found the lamp. And maybe if he'd had the lamp, he would have been able to beat Vlad. But because he couldn't find the lamp, Vlad wins. The true hero here is Aladdin. Basically is what we've summed up. Aladdin was Vlad's secret agent.
And this, ladies and gentlemen, is why we should not let the Wikipedia generation rewrite history.
Yes, well, that's true.
Ooh, touche, touche. You know, and I have to agree, you know, because I'm getting defensive. I want to defend Vlad. You know, those Ottomans, they had a reputation for stealing. I saw the movie Aladdin. He was a street rat. I saw the story of the 40 thieves. I know how they do over there. Somebody probably found it and stole it. But that's just me watching a lot of propaganda.
So Aladdin is a propaganda film. I mean, it's been proven for years that Disney was making a lot of propaganda films. So that's all Aladdin is. I don't know about the live action version, but at least the cartoon was a propaganda film.
Well, like, it's easier to get away with a lot more in animation than you can.
You don't have to deal with as many actors because you're just drawing pictures.
Yeah.
So we would never be able to do that because we can't draw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're terrible artists. So we can't draw.
I'm good on a happy face. That's the extent. That's the full extent.
Yeah. We can't even do
that's
that.
That's a group effort.
Yeah. That really
that is a group
is.
Effort.
We couldn't even draw that with a template. It's pretty bad. What a
template. So if there were 5 things you would want somebody who had never heard of Vlad before to know, so it would pretty much sum up everything so far, what would you say? If you had to come up with 5 points, which would educate somebody who had never heard of him?
5 points to really educate the people. Vlad, 5 good points. Vlad was the ultimate leader, selfless. He was the greatest leader of his time. What he did was very much based off bravery, chivalry, for his people. Vlad acted, when we say chivalry is not dead, Vlad is a very chivalrous man. He's very much a knight. He's very much someone who looks death in the face, dyslexia. That's number one. Our bravery, without a doubt, is his overwhelming attribute that history must reflect better for him. The second thing for Vlad, I would say, Vlad was a ruler, a king, and he earned his place. I know we have these stories of kings who were just born he's just a king because his father was a king. Yeah, Vlad's father was a king, but he wasn't a trust fund kid. these people, those, that type of person very much had to earn their keep. Vlad was not someone who, even though he was born noble into nobility, he very much had to earn his keep. That's one thing we, from growing up, I thought, oh, well, your daddy was a king, you a king. No, that's not the reality. The reality is, even as the son of a king, you've got to earn your keep. Vlad pulled his weight. Let the record reflect that.
I lost count. How many was that? Was that two, or was that?
It felt like two.
Five. I thought there was a lot rammed into number one.
Yeah, it was one of those, like, yeah, there's a lot of points here in this one point.
I was trying to think if I could fit it on a PowerPoint slide, and the answer in my head was a resounding no.
Yeah, that was a lot. But, you know, he's an interesting dude, right?
Right.
I mean, there's so much more to the backstory of Vlad than just, here's a dude that we decided to make Dracula out of.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Cool. I've got a great point I wanted to bring up. And this is just a sidebar. I want to address the slander, if that's okay.
Sure, mm-hmm. Go for it.
Now, I was going to finish the story, but this was a part of me just talking about Vlad. So people are going to say, Crumb, you are doing what sometimes people do. They romanticize history. Okay, all right. Maybe I am a little bit romantic. So Vlad burned the beggars. And I want to say that if we learn something about Vlad, good, bad, or indifferent, Vlad understood the concept of nationality. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. So here's a little meme, and it's very funny, and I'll read it, and then I'll break it down. It's only one another slide. Beggars burned. So Vlad says, okay, everyone, so I want to get rid of poverty. Any suggestions? Because keep in mind, he's the king. He wants to get rid of poverty in his country. Someone's raise wages. And another one, welfare. And then the guy in the back, burn all the beggars. So then Vlad makes contact with him. You're on to something. Give him a raise. So here's the reality. A part of Vlad's legacy is mixed. It's checkered. It's not, you know, the best that Crumb tries to paint it out to be. Vlad held a great feast with wine at the Capitol in a makeshift dining hall made of very flimsy wood, where he invited all the cripples, the poor, the sick, the vagrants, the beggars, the vagabonds, whatever you want to call them, the hobos, you know, these creative names, all the people of the land. The party lasted all day and even half the night. And in the wee hours of the morning, Vlad ordered the captain of his guards to nail the planks of the door and the windows. Well, he walks in very grandiose. I'm sorry. Let me share. He walks in very grandiose. And, you know, he does one of those things. Have you had fun? Yeah. Because keep in mind, he described it as a very putrid atmosphere. The stench in this place was mwah. It was horrible. Anyway, it was one to remember. It was very choice. Is this not what you want? Yes. Have you had your fill of drink and wine? Yes. Do you want more? Of course. So be it. So he walks out. Then he gives the order to nails the door shut and burn the buildings. And people who come against me and come against Vlad, they're going to say, Crumb, you're romanticizing history. That's a cold-blooded killer. And I say to those people, maybe his approach to building a better tomorrow for his civilization was different, but he meant well. He understood the value of giving back to his community. And I tell you, he led from the front, and he gave the ultimate sacrifice, which was his own life. So he's not just killing people and, you know, I'm going to kill people and lead from the back and people go to war. Too. Look, I'm leading from the front too. I'm putting my life on the line too. You guys don't want to fight? Get the F out of here.
I think they should adopt that policy for San Francisco, actually.
Well, not only that, but I'm thinking I've been to some parties like that where I would have just as soon had somebody nail the door shut and burn the place down because I didn't really want to be there.
Yeah.
And there are
Well, do you mean before you got there? Because not while you're actually there.
No, I mean while I'm actually there, just to put me out of my misery.
Oh, wow.
You know, but the problem here is it seemed like Vlad was putting together a pretty cool party. and these folks hadn't been to a party like that. So kind of suck for them.
Well, I think that's what was described there is pretty much how I think CNN kind of explains the conservative approach towards social welfare.
Yeah, either that or what do they call it? A mostly nonviolent protest.
Yeah, something yeah. like that.
So,
yeah.
You know, although they weren't protesting by any means.
I don't know if it was episode one or two. My apologies. We've done so much good work together. But we were talking about the TV show in America called All in the Family, starring a guy by the name of
Carol O'Connor, who played Archie Bunker.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. And the intro to the the theme song was "Everybody Pulled Their Weight." And the wife, no need for a welfare state. And Vlad at the end, those were the days.
Right, right. I don't remember if we edited that part out. I don't think we did. Because I think we were singing quite a bit there. Yeah, that was a good song. Yeah. Our old last Sal ran great. But that was also when you said you didn't have All in the Family over there in England. So
now, what was that sound you made before you made that sentence?
What? G-R-O-L-A-T-A.
G? Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, that's just part of the song. I promise you, that's just part of the song.
All right.
I don't know why you're looking at me.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever heard a sound like that before.
Oh, okay.
Well. And I am one of those few people who does know what sound a fox makes. So.
Yeah.
He is so funny. That's a real question here in America.
That is true. Mm. That is very true. Yeah, very cool.
And I didn't even know that. The kid's coming to me. What does the fox say? And I'm like, well, you know what? I don't know.
I didn't even realize that was a song until my kids came up and asked me, you know, about what a fox says. I'm like, well, it depends on the fox, right? Because the one in Robin Hood, he had a lot to say. I mean, he changed everything. If we're talking about poverty, I mean, he was trying to rob from the rich and give to the poor.
You are so talking about the cartoon and not the Sean Connery version, right?
I don't think there was a fox in the Sean Connery version.
No,
I think that was Robert Redford.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's right. No, I'm talking about the Disney. See, it's propaganda.
Right.
So maybe Disney put out that What Did the Fox Say song to get more people to watch their version of Robin Hood.
Yeah, but you also have a bit of a wide leap to make that connection, coupled with the fact that if anybody wanted to know what a fox sounded like, they would go to YouTube. So you're expecting them to find this tenuous link between Disney and what does the fox say?
Somebody's ran that rabbit hole.
But they can't work out how to get to YouTube.
Oh, so my parents?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that makes total sense.
You know, I do want to get back on topic. I must admit, however, Karma, you admitted that you do know what a fox sounds like? Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
It sounds like a small dog barking in a New Jersey accent.
So I think we need a demonstration. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's exactly what I was figuring.
Mm.
Oh.
I appreciate Shepard having, you know, the audacity to ask for that. I was scared. I wanted to ask, you know, could you vocalize it?
Oh, don't be scared. You can ask him to make any sound. That's always good for.
But there was also the danger I might not be able to replicate it in the studio environment. But
yeah, but you know I'm going to call you on any bluff. Yeah.
First thing he's going to do after this is finish recording, he's going to get on a YouTube and be like,
yeah.
Siri?
Yeah.
What does that fox say? You know, how does it really sound?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
due diligence. We gotta
we gotta check our facts.
Mm.
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, I do want to be balanced and just put it out there. You know, there were some things that could be interpreted as cruel and unusual, but even for me, in a twisted way, I understand that Vlad was simply expressing patriotism. And hey, you know what? Maybe that's a lot, but that's how I'm going to call that one. Getting back on topic, if I could. So now Vlad, he strikes fear into these people, and the guy wants to leave, but his people tell him, do not leave. Don't run away. I know you're scared. So finally he doesn't run away and he comes back to fight Vlad. The final leg of when he's getting ready to face off. The Turkish army entered the capital, and for almost half an hour, the army marched on the road that was bordered with 20,000 impaled Turks. There they found the rotten corpse of Hamaz Pasha. Family, you're gonna have to go back to episode number 2, where we talked about when they first faced off with Vlad. They sent this really bad dude, the Punisher, and Vlad made light work of him. They finally see this guy, and he's impaled. Now, he's not just impaled. Hamaz Pasha was impaled on the highest stake to symbolize his high rank. Other sources say that the city was defended by soldiers while the impaled corpse lay outside the city walls for a distance of 60 miles. Either way, when remarking the reaction of the Sultan, this is what they wrote that the Sultan said. What does the Sultan say? I can't help. I just want to say, bear with me. So this is what he said. The Sultan was seized with amazement and said that it wasn't possible to deprive his country a man who had done such great deeds, who had such a diabolical understanding of how to govern his realm and his people. And he said that a man who had done such a thing was worth much. In a somewhat sick and twisted way, the Sultan had to give Vlad his flowers, just like I am saying. I am saying this guy deserves his respect. And for your enemy to say these things about you speaks volumes. Let me finish and I'll pass the mic. Mehmed ordered for a deep trench to be dug out around the Turkish encampment in order to prevent enemy penetration and following. Keep in mind, remember, Vlad just ran up on you. So now we're going to build a trench just to make sure Vlad don't run up on me again. Where I'm from, that's called post-traumatic stress syndrome. You know, you've been scarred from a previous experience. I digress. They built a trench around the encampment in order to prevent enemy penetration. And the following day, the Turks retreated. A few days later, Vlad's cousin, Stefan of Moldavia, who wanted to retake these cities, launched an attack. But the Wallachians rushed in with a couple thousand men, and they held everything down. Not even the vultures on the sidelines watching could take any opportunity. Vlad was a beast. The Turks called for the celebration for their great victory over Vlad Tepes. He's the other dude. The Turks enslaved many of the local inhabitants, which they marched on their way south together with 200,000 cattle and horses. They just picked on a bunch of small guys on their way out. They could never get Vlad. They eventually caught Vlad. They skinned Vlad. They did everything imaginable to Vlad. The way Vlad got caught, very suspicious. Crumb, you're wrong. You're not finishing the story. You're only going to tell the good part of where Vlad comes out on top and the part of where they caught Vlad, even though for me it's very sketchy, it's very skeptical. I'm not even going to propagate that. Same thing, and I'll pass the mic. Same thing in the Revolutionary War with Benedict Arnold. Benedict Arnold was nothing less than a military genius, and the way he got caught, if we go and study the Revolutionary War, was nothing less of suspicious and a rewriting of history, because America, you know, he didn't do as the one percenters wanted him to. So with that said, I'm not going to talk about how they caught Vlad. I believe that's a bunch of Ottoman propaganda where the truth was not able to make it to the forefront. With that said, that's my piece on Vlad. I've got some more dirt to talk about, but I wanted to at least just give a conclusion to where we can say happily ever after. That's the way my Vlad story ends. The end.
I don't think he's going to get any jobs writing for Disney, because I'm not quite sure Crumb understands what happily ever after means. Yeah. That's not really a happily ever after when you end up dead.
Yeah, he was supposed to
I don't know, but maybe it's happily ever after if you're married to somebody terrible.
Well, he had a beautiful wife, remember?
Oh, that's right.
Despite the fact he was ugly as crap,
he had a beautiful wife. But maybe she was a pain. So maybe that is happily ever after.
Right.
You know, the prettier they are, the harder they are to put up with. Mm-hmm. You know, just, you know, at least looking at him, like you say, he has this beautiful wife, right? And she's considering herself a trophy wife, probably. So he's probably saying, hey, I won first place. Because there's a lot of guys out there that they say, hey, you know, I've got a trophy wife. I'm like, you didn't win first place with that trophy. So it makes total sense. So that could have been a happily ever after for him.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, Vlad has cemented his place in history. The world will never forget about Vlad, good, bad, or indifferent. I just want to be one of those mavericks who operates to the rhythm of a different drum, where I see these people from a different perspective. So now that I've given my perspective on Vlad, and I refuse to tell the story of how it ended because I'm sketchy on that, I do want to say why he is a questionable character, because he was hated on both sides for war crimes. But I will say this, desperate times call for desperate measures. So the people at home hated Vlad as well. Should I get into that part too?
Well, you know, why did they hate him? I mean, if he's defending the country and taking care of everybody and all that, I'm sure he's probably got his fans and his followers, right? So obviously, no matter what it is, I mean, you look at, say, the New England Patriots, and they've won all these games and all these championships. And so many people can say, hey, they're the greatest football team ever. They're the new dynasty. But there's people that don't like the New England Patriots. So everybody's going to have a hater.
Thank you. I appreciate that. There's two sides to every coin. There's two sides to every story. You know better than I do. So now, why did Vlad have such a bad reputation at home as well as abroad? Well, so he knew there was a problem at home in terms of a weak government. So just like in America, you might have Congress, you know, bipartisan, same thing.
Yeah, you got it right the first time. It's bipolar and bipartisan.
Yeah.
You know, a topic, and, you know, Congress is at a deadlock. We can't move forward. You know, the government's about to be insolvent. We can't pay the army. Well, we're definitely going to pay the army. Or, you know, we can't pay certain parts of the government, whatever the case may be. The same thing was in his government, where his Congress were called boyars. So now the boyars, they figured out the way they could maintain power is by keeping a weak king. So now he headed them, he dealt with them head on and did a consolidation of power. This is no different than Abraham Lincoln suspending habeas corpus.
Well, I see your point there. I mean, that's a pretty close correlation.
Yeah.
Although, ironically, Abraham Lincoln killed vampires too.
Oh, in the movie, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
The Shepherd got one. He got one.
I get a wolf ticket. I'm going to sell that as a wolf ticket.
All right.
I'm going to sell that one for $2.50. Mm.
This has been a trend, because the last couple of episodes, the Shepherds has always been bringing a lot of good correlations between film and other things, where we get the history, but we may not connect it like we're doing with the wolf and the shepherd. So touche for the shepherd on that one. Absolutely. Oh,
very nice. Cool. Well, Crumb, it's always good to see you. And we hope that, you know, on this next one that you bring up, we don't want to give any spoilers or anything like that, but you do have some more programs coming up for us, and we're going to get together and talk about those. But as we've done in some of the past episodes, and we want to make sure that we definitely do it in this one, because we're kind of closing Vlad out, make sure to tell everybody how they can find more content about you, how to get a hold of you, social media, and all that good stuff.
But the reality is I just created a TikTok and my TikTok is going viral. I've been on Instagram. I'm almost at 20,000 followers, 60,000 on Facebook, 20,000 on YouTube. And I could give you all these links, but those people shadow ban me. They ban me. They demonetize me. They restrict my account. I'm in Facebook jail. So with that said, I'm on crumbtv.info, which is my personal website. The links to all my social medias are there, but crumbtv.info is not .com. I get it. But .info suits me very well. Family, if you want to catch me, you can catch me there.
Cool. Very good, man. Well, once again, Crumb, we certainly appreciate you. And thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. And we will catch you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.